This is May 17th, 1996, and this interview is with Crosby Wells at his home on 4 Undermountain Road in Salisbury. Let's begin with biographical information, where you were born and when, and then into your parents and where they were born.
Well, I was born in White Plains, New York in 1922, and 2 years later, my family moved to Brewster, New York. My father wanted to be with his mother, and they did over an old playhouse and across from my street from my grandmother and turned that into a residence.
This was in Brewster?
In Brewster, yeah. Mm. Originally, it had two bowling alleys in it, and a billiard room and a ballroom. So our living room was a great big room. And my father was Henry Hubbard Wells. He was born in Brewster. His father settled there after the Civil War, and his brother arranged for him to be the bookkeeper in the Borden's condensed milk factory there, which was being run by a son of Gale Borden. And my grandfather ended up starting the being co-founder with this son of Gale Borden of the First National Bank of Brewster's. My mother was from Chappaqua, and she was a Quaker, and I remember going to Quaker meeting with her at Chappaqua and Purchase and in Mount Kisco.
Was she born in New York as well?
She was born in Chappaqua, and she had an unusual happening as a child that they a tornado came through and moved her house down a whole field. And she was pinned under the house with her sister and mother and grandmother, and her grandmother died while my mother had to watch her die while she was singing a Quaker hymn. It was quite an experience. And her sister and her mother were so upset that really out of it, my mother had to end up taking this coffin back to Easton, Pennsylvania, for to bury her grandmother. After the Mount Riga Corporation, that land up there was purchased by the great-grandfather of Donald T. Warner, who died last year. The great-grandfather was getting on in years, and he bought it at a tax sale. It was all owned by this mine smelting company up there.
When was that he did this?
Well, the mining company went out of business in 1848. Now, I just don't know. It's a matter of checking the land records to find out when this tax sale was held. But I would guess around the 1880s. And it really was a large tract of land, and it was really only useful for fishing and hunting. And it was the road up there was really, even in the 30s when I went there were no culverts under the road. All they had a ditch across the road at various points, and they called thank you man's because you like that, and the water came across those things, and it was really a very narrow road, a few places to pass. And now it's so that it's much better. So he bought that because I guess he had a cabin up there. I don't know exactly, but anyway, he bought it because he liked the fishing, and he was getting on in years, and he wanted to unload some of this holding. Although it really, by today's terms, it was practically a very small price that he bought it at the tax sale. So my father's sister was very friendly with the grandchildren of this Donald Judson Warner, and she'd stayed there up a great deal, and so it came up that my father's sister just loved it up there. And I guess she was approached, and whether you'd like to buy a third of this Mount Riga. And so my grandmother ended up buying a third of Mount Riga so that her daughter could have a camp And the camp that she had is, I think, the best location on Mount Rogers, where the, it's called Wish Come True. And have these islands out there with trees on it and a spectacular view of Monument Mountain. It's really out of this world.
And then, and this was before you were in
this
area.
This would be around, probably around 1903, something like that. And they sold another third to a family in Sharon, whose name I do not recall, but the descendants were the Swab family. Now, the name might have been Wheeler. I could find that out. And so that each family had a third undivided ownership, and that got to be very complicated when people died off and this, that, and the other thing. So they, 1922, they incorporated, and each of the three families had a third interest.
The Warners still retained some of it?
They had a third, and the Wellses had a third, and this family in Sharon, which is now the Swab family, had a third.
That's S-W-A-B?
S-C-H-W-A-B.
S-C-H-W-A-B.
S-C-H-W-A-B. And Gustav Swab lived, he's still alive, he lived at Sharon for quite a while, and as did his sister. So that's just about it. And the, at that time, there were still buildings left there from the smelting days. The Iron Master's Lodge, and the corporation rented that out for income. And then there was one, as you, do you know Mount Rogers at all?
Mm-hmm. I've been up there.
As you go up the hill, there's so-called Wentworth, and that was rented out. And then there's what they call the Frink place past the cemetery, that was rented out. And then I think that other properties had been rented to tenants, and that's how the corporation existed, although they were always in precarious financial condition until in the last about 10 or 15 years ago they sold the land around the Appalachian Trail, which runs right through the Mount Rogers property, and that was a great help. Why don't you shut off for a second? What else would you like to know?
Oh,
hello.
Hi. How are you?
So what I could tell about when my family went up there, they well, my aunt first, but I, but my father and mother started going up there in 1913, and renting a cabin which had been built by one of the cousins of the Warners, the Harrison family. And at that time there were still raggies left up there. I don't know how they existed after the mine smelting went out of business, because there was nothing up there except farming, and it was a terrible place for farming. It was at a very limited season, and that's one reason why the trees haven't grown up. Of course, it was all clear cut, all that whole mountain. Everything
right there
was clear cut to make charcoal. But there were still people up there. Across the lake, there was a house where the Guest Beach is now, and the Ostrander family lived there. And they used to sell fish to my family. And then there were another family down the, what we call the Ore Hill Road, it's a reservoir road now. Hank and Nat Taylor. And they used to do odd jobs for people. And I know that my grandfather was missing a crowbar once. And he came up and asked one of them about it. And he said, Major Wells, I didn't take your crowbar, I got 10 to home. And my grandfather asked them, when their father died, they had this house, I never saw it, but apparently it had tin cans patching the roof, and it was just a terrible place. And when they, grandfather, my father was a major in the Civil War, asked them whether they settled the estate. And Nat told my brother, father, he said that I took the watch and Nat took the gun. That was how the estate was settled. Mm. And then there were other people would appear out of the woods. There was a man named Tom Malley, who was a raggy. I don't know where he lived, but he looked like Abraham Lincoln after a drunk, all unshaven. And he'd come into our camp every summer, very scary. Everybody was scared. Well, the women particularly were scared of him. And he would be selling blueberries. And he would walk way up Monument Mountain and come back and these blueberries, and somehow he could exist on that. And I think my father occasionally got him to chop split wood and take up something to help him out.
And these were descendants
of
people
the raggies that worked up
the mining and the charcoal.
Yeah. And I remember he used to chop wood. He had a little tin box, and he'd take these pills out. He'd slow down and take a pill, and then he would speed up. And I think it was laudanum. And at that time, the road was so terrible in the 20s and 30s. Well, this is before my time, but it was so terrible that their food was all brought up to these tenants and the owners up there. The original families each took a campsite, and the Warners took theirs, and the Wellses took theirs, which became the McCabe property in Upper Lake. And my grandfather took his, which is that big house at the top of the hill there on the left, if you turn left at the dam. And my family finally got their campsite because the corporation owed my grandmother a lot of money. She'd been subsidizing it, so they gave her a campsite. But everybody else is a tenant up there, with this, except for the Blackburns, who acquired an oddball piece of property on this Ore Hill Road that, that Frank McCabe's mother-in-law had owned.
Well, how many people are in the area now?
Well, they're about there. I think they're 36. What they call camps now.
And many of those people are simply leasing.
They're leasing, but starting about 20 years ago, the people wanted to unload the Mount Raga stock. It got to be so. $750 a share and not paying a dividend, and some people were very happy to unload this stock, and that so most of the tenants now own stock, maybe one or two shares.
When did you start going up there?
Well, I was born in 1922. I'm sure I went up there in 1922. And I spent every summer there except when I was at war. And I was a general counsel of this Greek State Power Company for 4 years, from 51 to 55, and I was away at that time. Another incident which was quite amusing was that the Iron Master's house, it's called Cassinook, that was rented for a while. I think it was a boarding house at one time, but anyway, a man named Sedan, and apparently there was still a name around here, Sedan, and apparently there was a Colonel Sedan in the Civil War, and so they called this guy Colonel Sedan, and he had tenants, sub-tenants in there. Anyway, he's sort of running a boarding house, and there was one tenant there that was quite difficult, didn't pay his rent. So my grandpa, Don Warner's great-grandfather, that would be the son of the original owner, was riding up in a horse and wagon and talking to Colonel Sedan, and Colonel Sedan wanted to get this man out. But Judge Warner said, well, why don't you just get an axe and just get him out? And he said, oh, well, they'd had a revival meeting up there, evangelical, and everybody is really with it. He said, oh, no, Judge, I can't do that. I can't do that. I wish you would go down. You would go to your law office and write him a letter and ask him that he must leave and write a letter such as our Savior would write. And then if he don't get out, we'll get an axe and give him hell.
The law first, right. And after the law, there's something
right.
Else. Judge Warner was your...
Well, Judge Warner was the Donald Warner's great-grandfather, but I think that the original one was also a judge, if I'm not mistaken.
You have a long history of the law.
Oh, yes, and there's a picture of Don Warner's grandfather in the town hall, a great picture by Emmett Rand, the famous portraitist who did FDR's picture. many other pictures. By the way, that's a picture taken, that's a painting taken from my grandmother's camp, looking across at the Iron Master's Lodge. Mm. My mother painted that. She started painting at 75. That's her grandmother there. And that's a Quaker meeting house in Chappaqua. And she did all these paintings here.
Hmm. And she started painting at 75,
and she painted till she was 95. And it was rather amusing because her sister, she didn't know she could paint, but her sister painted, and she was always interested in paintings. And her sister is the mother of Catherine Chapman. You know her? She lives on Wells Hill Road. But my mother's sister, my mother got to be better in a very short time than her sister. And her sister had been painting all her life, and all of a sudden she stopped painting. She said, well, Caroline has servants. She has time to paint. I don't. So that was the end of her painting. But Catherine's a very good painter. She's had shows around here.
When did you move to the Salisbury area?
Well, I retired in 1990. I was general counsel of engineering and construction firm called Abasco Services Incorporated. Mm-hmm. And about 5,000 or 6,000 employees. I retired, and we bought this house at that time. We were, wanted to send my son to the gunnery where my grandfather went. And when way back, we noticed that prices were seemed to be going up at that time. And we went to Orpher Robinson and lived up the street, and this was the first house we looked at. Hmm. And the Salisbury Bank, at that time, mortgage money was short. They wouldn't lend money unless you lived in a house, trying to live in it. So we had to go across the street to another bank. But they were very paternalistic. Well, it's been very nice.
Well, so you knew the area from early boyhood.
Oh, yes. And plus, the Warners, our cousins, they were on the street here. One of the Warners would be the generation of Donald Warner's grandfather, and they had the second house from the brook, and there were three maiden aunts in there, and they apparently, it's true that two of them didn't speak to one of them, so one of them they lived in the same house and everything, and it just went on for decades, and when they're not speaking to each other. And then the first house is so-called 1 acre, and that was owned by Kent Fulton, who built the golf course up here. It was an 18-hole golf course on Route 41, apparently one of the best in New England. And he married a Warner also. So then there were at least three Warner houses right on the east side of the road.
Well, tell me about the 10th Mountain Division. There seemed to be a number of people around here who were in that division.
Well, the 10th Mountain Division was founded by the leading light was a, I have to think of the name for a moment. But anyway, he was the, I think he'd also started the National Ski Patrol. Hmm. And he was inspired by the way the Finns held out against the Russians.
Yes.
On the skis. And he thought there ought to be mountain troops, and maybe there would be an attack from the west, the Rocky Mountains, and that was one thought. And plus the fact maybe they thought they'd be needed in Europe. Minnie Dole, that's his name, C. Minot Dole. And so
D-O-E?
Minot Dole, D-O-L-E.
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 Dole.
And he wrote Marshall about it repeatedly, and finally, I think he wrote FDR too, and finally the Marshall thought it would be a good idea, and so it was decreed that there'd be this mountain division. And when I entered, you had to have three letters of recommendation that you were a skier or a mountaineer type, and which is rather unusual for the infantry.
Were you a skier?
Yeah, I had ski, yes. And they trained first at Mount Rainier, and by the time I got there, the actual division, well, they started out with just the 87th Regiment, which David Harris was in, and Reese Harris. And then they moved down to Camp Hale in Colorado, and they built a whole camp in the valley for this, and at 9,500 feet, so there was lots of snow there. We were skiing right through June.
Well, what drew you to the 10th Mountain Division?
Well, I liked the idea of being in the ski troops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And were you already in when this opportunity came along, or was that what
you... Oh, no, I volunteered for it.
I see.
Right. And I'll have to show you the recruiting poster upstairs. It's quite dramatic. And so they were, apparently it's about the most heavily trained and longest trained division in the United States Army. I mean, they were really trained for a long while. They didn't know what to do with us.
When did you join?
I went in July 1943. And it was in this valley of the mountains all around, and they had a terrible problem with the bituminous coal that heated the barracks, and everybody had what they call pando hack. I mean, it was really, and there was this real smog. It was very unhealthy. But we were often out for weeks at a time on the snow, and camping out in these little tents and everything. And one of the miserable parts was having a 20 below zero to get out of your little tent and stand guard for 2 hours. And then you'd be 4 hours off or 2 hours on. And you'd end up just how to kill time. What I used to do is try to figure out what the first thing I did in my life and try to go up and try to remember everything. But terribly boring and very cold. And then they
decided... Well, you were then what, 20, 21 years old?
Yes. Yes. And then eventually they decided that we should go to Italy, to the Apennines. And they made their name on a place called Riva Ridge. Apparently the Americans had three times tried to take this ridge. It was an ascent of something like 1,500 feet. And the Germans were on the top, and it was really unassailable. And our people, we had a lot of professional, very good climbers. They went up with pitons of ropes up the side that the Germans never thought we'd go up. And they went up at night, and it was a complete surprise. And they took that ridge, and then they took the next mountain, which is Mount Belvedere. And these were sort of the strong points from which the Germans could levy shells on our troops. And then our division moved very fast. We were the first to cross the Po, and often our flanks were exposed. And there were a lot of college types in it. And the first engagement I was in, the squads were 12 people in it, and there were only two left at the end of this first push. They had been killed and wounded and desertions. And so I was made a staff sergeant, and I didn't last long in that lofty rank because one of the next pushes, I was going through this peaceful apple orchard, and I'd called in the two scouts, and I'd ended up being the first one through it, this apple orchard, and I stepped on a landmine, so that was the end of me. And I was carried back by Germans, carried me back. They were very glad to have safe passage back. They figured they were carrying an American soldier they would be shot at.
And this was when, Mr. Wilson?
It's 1945, very near the end. And so I spent 16 months in the hospital, and then I went to law school at the University of Virginia, and went to work in a law firm in New York, which eventually sent me over to be general counsel at the Greek State Power Company, which one of their clients was running and building a whole new power system for Greece. This part of the Truman plan to help Greece recover after this terrible civil war against the communists. And they managed the building of three hydro plants and a lignite burning plant and transmission line. And then I came back to the home office, and I ended up being general counsel of one of their clients, the same client that was managing the Greek State Power Company.
Where had you gone to undergraduate school?
I went to Yale, and before that I went to Hotchkiss here. And before that was public school in Brewster. Well, I went to the Harvey School, which is a pre-prep school. Before that I went to public school in Brewster, New York.
So, although you didn't live here, you certainly spent a lot of time.
Oh, yes, and my father went to Hotchkiss, and we were very close to the Werner family, many generations.
Well, that's very interesting.
Right.
I thank you very much for the interview.
Did you ever...